Characteristic, unproduced, unseized, stainless, not without stain, not deficient, not fulfilled. Shariputra, therefore, in emptiness, there is no form, no feeling, no discrimination, no composition, practice, no consciousness, no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no visual form, no sound, no odor, no taste, no object of touch, and no phenomenon. There is no eye element, and so on. Up to and including no mind element and no mental consciousness element, there is no ignorance, no extinction of ignorance, and so on up to and including no aging and death and no extinction of aging and death. Similarly, there is no suffering, origination, cessation, and path. There is no exalted wisdom, no attainment, and no non-attainment. Shariputra, therefore, because there is no attainment, bodhisattvas rely on and dwell in the perfection wisdom, the mind without obscuration and without fear. Having completely passed beyond error, they reach the end point of nirvana. All the Buddhas who dwell in the three times also manifest the complete awakening to unsurpassable perfect complete enlightenment in reliance on the perfect wisdom. Therefore, the mantra of the perfect wisdom, the mantra of great knowledge, the mantra of great knowledge, the unsurpassed mantra, the mantra equal to the unequal, the mantra that thoroughly pacifies the suffering should be known as truth since it is not false. The mantra of the perfection was declared, the Yathagatagata Paragata Sangata Bodhisvaha, Shariputra, the Bodhisattva, the great being, should train in the profound perfection of wisdom like that. Then the Bhagavan arose from that concentration and commended the Bodhisattva, the great being, Noble Avalokiteshvara, saying, well said, son of the lineage. It is like that, it is like that. One should practice the profound perfection of wisdom just as you have indicated, and even the Tathagatas rejoice. The Bhagavan, having thus spoken, the Venerable Sharadatiputra, the Bodhisattva, the great being, Noble Avalokiteshvara, those surrounding in their entirety, along with the world of gods, humans, Asuras, and Gandharvas were overjoyed and highly praised that spoken by the Bhagavan.
Sarjebe chide irande chumden de ge sumbalo ngombaratu do. All of this
blessing, offering blessing for the tea. Hopefully people have heard the announcements from the Changchub Lamrim Teaching Organizing Committee. If you have not heard, let me just read it again. To avoid accidents and injuries, we request all of you to please travel slowly and carefully while walking on or driving in the road. A free, simple lunch will be provided each day inside the teaching venue to all attendees. If you like to have this food, please bring your own bowl and spoon. Toilets are located outside of the security gates near Gate 4. Tibetan and allopathic Western medical care is available behind the public toilets outside of Gate 4. Do not take photos with your iPad or it will be taken away from you by the security department. You may not take any photos or video inside the teaching venue unless you have a press pass. Please keep this in mind, those who are holding your iPads. And please take care of the environment by throwing your waste only in designated garbage bins, lost and found. And if you find a lost item, you can bring it you can bring it to the office of the Changchub Lamrim Teaching Organizing Committee, which is located in room number 110 at the backside of the teaching venue on the ground floor. Please look for your lost items there. Thank you for your attention, these announcements. And then a partial portion of the Lamrim, Shamal Lamrim, is available on Changchub Lamrim website.
Ganda Yanda Dembe Tumnam Namba.
This is a salutation, verse of salutation from Abhisamaya Lamkara by Maitreya. By the knower of all, here is seeking pacification and led to peace. Perfect peace by the knower of the path. Those benefiting migrating beings accomplish the welfare of the world by the perfect possession of it. The subduers teach the varieties possessing all aspects to those mothers of the Buddhas, together with the hosts of heroes and bodhisattvas, to homage. And then this is a verse of salutation from Master Nagarjuna's Mula Madhyamaka Karika.
Sobe Sange Manam Ge Dhamba De La Chat, prostrating to the Buddha for teaching dependent origination free of the eight extremes.
Now we are going through the lineage Lama prayer of Lamrim. Magnificent and precious Root Guru, please abide on the lotus seat at my crown. Guide me with your great kindness and grant me the realizations of your holy body, speech, and mind. So, request to the method lineage, the founder, the Bhagavan, and the incomparable guide, invincible Lord Maitreya, the conqueror's regent, Arya Sangha, whose coming was prophesied by the conqueror to the three Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, I make request. And next is Vasubandhu, crown ornament of this world's learned ones, Arya Vimukti Sena, who found the middle path, Vimukti Sena Gomin, the noble foundation of abiding faith, to you three who opened the eyes of the world, I make request. Then comes Paramasena, who has exalted and marvelous accomplishments, Vinita Sena, who trained his mind in the profound path, Verochana, a treasury of great waves of conduct, to you three friends of migrators, I make request. Haribhadra, who composed vast treatises on the supreme path of Prajaparamita, Kusali, the holder of all the conqueror's instructions, Ratnasena, who lovingly cared for all living beings, to you three helmsmen of sentient beings, I make request. Suvarnadvipa, who realized Bodhicitta in his holy mind, Atisha, this is Master Atisha, who upheld the tradition of the great vehicle, precious Dromtömba, Adisha's disciple, who clarified the noble path, to you three pillars of the teaching, I make request. And then next is request to the wisdom lineage, the profound wisdom or view lineage. To Lord Buddha, the pinnacle of Shakyas, supreme guide, peerless in explaining emptiness, Manjushri, total unity of all the Buddha's infinite wisdom, the supreme Arya Nagarjuna, who saw the profound meaning, to you three crown ornaments of the learned ones, I make request. And Chandrakirti, who clarified the Arya's intentions, Vidya Kokila, the elder, intelligent elder son, Vidya Kokila the younger, a conqueror's son, to you three powerfully intelligent ones, I make request. Atisha, who saw profound dependent arising just as it is, who upheld the tradition of the great vehicle, precious Dhammadhampa, who clarified the noble path, to you, to ornaments of this world, I make request. Gwenpawa, magnificent, powerful yogi, Nusurpa, who had stable concentration on the profound path, Thagmapa, who upheld the whole collection of Vinaya, to you three lamps of the border regions, I make request. Namgha Senge, who practiced with earnest effort, Namgha Gyalpo, who was blessed by one of the holy ones, the concerns to Gelze Zangpo, I make request. With Bodhicitta seeing all beings as his children, blessed and cared for, Gadam Shungpawa, the scholastic lineage, Potowa, the conqueror's regent, Sharawa, unequaled in discrimination or discernment, Chekawa, who realized the advice of Bodhicitta, to you three who fulfill the hopes of beings, I make request. Chilpuba, Bodhisattva, possessor of all transmissions, oral transmissions and insights. Lalung Wangchuk, supremely learned one. Gwenpa Rinpoche, savior of all beings in the three realms. To you three great elders, I make request. Tsang Chenpa, who had the sweet scent of pure morality, Tsonawa, master of 100,000 sections of Vinaya, Mundaba, an ocean of Abhidharma, to you three guides of migratory beings, I make request. Realized a vast and profound Dharma who protected all the fortunate beings who did noble deeds of the vast teachings. Glorious Guru Chögyab Sangpo, at your feet I make request. Then requested a Gadam Mengakpa, the pit instruction lineage. Tsultimbar, great, powerful, accomplished one. Shönuul, who practiced perfect devotion to his spiritual friend. Gergomba, who trained his mind in the Mahayana path, to you three sons of the conquerors, I make requests. Sangye Wen, treasury of marvelous qualities. Namka Gyalpo, who was blessed by the holy ones. Sengye Zangpo, who abandoned the eight worldly concerns. Gyalse Zangpo, at your feet, I make requests. With bodhicitta, seeing all beings as his children, blessed and cared for by the exalted God, supreme spiritual friend, guiding migratory beings in degenerate times, Namgya Gelsen, at your feet I make requests. Next is...
Amen. Lord, Oh.
was a refuge in bodhicitta before the teaching. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened. The Buddha, Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly, by the collections of merit and wisdom, my Creator, listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. So say this three times. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly through the accumulation. My Creator, listening to the teaching, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. So this is calling on all the gods, non-gods, like the Indra and so forth, to come and listen to this nectar of the teaching of the Buddha. It is a nectar to the ears of sentient beings. It dispels all the negative emotions. I will give teaching in the languages of all different types of beings. I prostrate to the Gautama, who out of his compassion taught the holy Dharma to rid us of all the distorted views. Out of his compassion taught us. So today, here in Gaden Changze Monastery, because of the space, and at this venue, we held this teaching here, the broad and open space. So almost all the teachings of Lamrim, the stages of the path of enlightenment that I have received from many teachers, I've been giving this teaching at the request of Ling Chokchen Rinpoche to give. So this is the third year. It started 3 years ago, and this time we are going to do the remaining texts. First, we'll start with the Shamar Lamrim, which is notes to the Delam, blissful path of bliss or easy path, and also Shamar Rinpoche's commentary to the insight section of Lamrim Chemo, to the difficult points of the Delam, which I received these teachings from one Amdo Lama. And then there's liberation in the palm of your hands, which was written down by Gyabje Chijan Rinpoche himself from the teachings of. So I've received this teaching from Gyabje Chijan Rinpoche himself. So perhaps we may not be able to complete these two texts this time. So whatever is remained, we'll do it next year. So I'll make sure that I finish the Lamrim teachings next year. So those who have come for this teaching are the monks of the three monastic institutions of Geluk and also Teshe Limpo. And then in Bailokwe, we have Namdo Ling monastic institution. These are the biggest learning institutions of Tibetan Buddhist monasteries. And so it's been maybe 500 to 600 years since these three monastic learning centers were founded in Tibet, Although they are situated, located in central Tibet, their influence is spread all over Tibet and also Mongolia. So their influence is very wide, and also regarding Dashi Limbo Monastery. What's happening? Wait,
늦게 용우미도 가졌어.
Sorry, I couldn't hear His Holiness.
끼에 총을 땅서 가지고 그래.
And so these monastic institutions actually are engaged in studying the classic texts. And so even after coming into exile, we have these monastic institutions practically serving the Buddha Dharma. So what it means is that we have the 300, over 300 volumes of Ganjur and Denjur. And these texts, scriptures, contain the commentaries by Indian masters, for example, the five treatises of Maitreya, and also the Madhyamaka texts like Mula Madhyamaka Karika and so forth. And so, having studied these texts, we also have the tantric teachings. And so these texts and scriptures which have come down to us through Master Nagarjuna and Master Asanga and so forth, if we are able to study them thoroughly, then we'll be able to actually understand the complete whole structure of Buddhism. So, of course, these texts deal with bodhicitta and also the understanding of emptiness. And so without these two together, it's difficult for us to achieve our goal of enlightenment. And therefore, the monks in these monastic institutions really study, do rigorous study of these classic texts, and you are serving the Buddha Dharma practically. So I have this fortunate opportunity to give this teaching on the Lamrim text. You should not say that, oh, I have received the transmission of the Lamrim text. So with regard to Lamrim texts, we have to make the Lamrim Chemo, the great treatise of the stages of the Path to Enlightenment, as the foundational text for our study of Lamrim. Once you understand the rest of the Lamrim Chemo itself, the rest of the Lamrim texts, even if you actually, what happens is you will be able to really make sense of the rest of the Lamrim text. Without Lamrim Chemo, understanding Lamrim Chemo, the rest of the Lamrim text may give you some understanding, but not the complete. And though in order to understand the Lamrim Chemo, then we need also...
You may have a chance.
Sorry, there's a problem with the sound system. And and especially with regard to Lamrim texts, we learn about the profound view of emptiness. And then we have come into the 21st century. We have come in contact with modern science and technology, where they do rigorous experiment and research in the texts. What's going on? And with regard to the text that we study, of course, the Indian classic texts were written with lots of logic and epistemology. But with regard to the texts written in Tibet by the Tibetan masters, seem to sometimes focus on some small topics, and narrow topics, as if they were meant for people in a very remote places for their own purpose, and not to have a vast perspective, broad perspective. Whereas the Indian texts are not like that. You can see they cover a broad range of topics, give you a broad view. And when Master Adisha came to Tibet, the Tibetan leader at that time, Changchubu, requested him to give a teaching, a concise teaching, without going into the details and elaborate explanations and so forth. And then in certain texts by Master Adisha, it is said sometimes that the logic and epistemology, reasoning and so forth are needed for us to actually argue against and defeat in logic and reasoning the non-Buddhist traditions. So there are some indications like that too. And so, of course, Master Adisha himself studied Blades of Reasoning by Master Bhaviveka, which is a very vast text covering all kinds of philosophical systems. And then if you look at Chandideva's Bodhisattvacharya Avatara, what it gives is the practical aspect of the teachings, and also it goes through the various challenging views and the challenging ideas, and also he actually rejects non-Buddhist and argues against non-Buddhist and other philosophical views. And so we need to follow that kind of example to have a vast perspective of the entire path of the Buddha. So with regard to so we have come into exile, not out of choice, of course, and we had to flee our country and scatter, have to be scattered around in different places, and we have gone through lots of difficulties and hardships. But and this is, of course, on the one hand, it's a very sad situation. But we actually, by coming into exile, we have become more. We have gained broader view of the world in the East and West and so forth. And unlike how we lived, with a very narrow-mindedness inside Tibet. And if we think along the lines of the Buddha's teaching of the four seals, seeing that whatever is composite is impermanence and suffering, and then emptiness and selflessness, we can actually find bliss and delight in the teaching. So we came out
enter the wider world, and now we are in this world out of our own closets, which is like Tibet. And so, having come into exile into this wider world, what we need to learn is the profundity and the vastness of our own tradition with regard to the basis, the pattern, the result. And so through our reasoning and logic, if we gain our faith based on them, then your faith, our faith, will be a very firm and stable one. In the Haribhadra's commentary to Abhisamaya Alankara, this Sphuta Artha, the clear meaning, it mentions two types of disciples or followers of the Buddha. One is a follower who follows with faith, mainly faith, and the other with reason. And so the teaching of the Buddha in general is meant for those of the beings with sharp faculty. And therefore, we have to be able to follow that trend. Of course, if certain disciples have to follow based on faith alone, we need to accordingly show the path to them as well. But in general, when we give the teaching on Lamrim, for example, we need to keep in mind that we are giving teaching in order for one individual to start with the beginning of the path and culminating into the result. And so usually when I give teachings, I usually give a broad outline of the teaching of the Buddha and how to do the practice of the teaching itself within these two broad outlines. And so the Buddhists and particularly the monks have already heard me giving this teaching and this introduction before. But this time, because there are so many people from different countries who have come to the teaching here, and also many places where Buddhism didn't used to be their traditional religion, people from those regions have also come here this time. And so I thought of doing a short introduction to the Buddha Dharma. So those of you who already know, and don't think that I'm repeating over and over again. And so because there are new people who are new to the teaching, on the one hand, and secondly, so as Buddhism is meant for beings with sharp faculty, as the Buddha himself has said, O monks and scholars, just as gold is tested by rubbing, cutting, and burning, likewise, examine my teaching thoroughly and then accept it, but not because you have devotion to me. So the monks who study, have studied the Master Tsongkhapa's Essence of True Eloquence know this verse well, as he quotes it there. So the Buddha doesn't say that if you don't believe in me, you will be born into the hell realms. And whereas the Buddha doesn't say that, most of the other teachings, the founders of other teachings, have said that if you follow the will of God, then you'll be born in heaven. And if you go against it, you'll be born in hell and so forth. But Buddha doesn't say that at all. He doesn't say that you have to accept my teaching because of your faith in me, because you trust me. But just as a goldsmith tests the purity or the quality of gold by rubbing, cutting, and burning, likewise, the Buddha says, this teaching that I have given, you should examine it, whether there is a logical fallacy and whether it can be undermined, my teaching can be undermined by and invalidated by reasoning and logic. And not only that, by You should also experiment it, and then you, when you actually find it to be true and beneficial, then you should accept my teaching. And just as the Buddha himself had said this, likewise, Master Nagarjuna and others differentiate between the teachings which can be undermined by logical reasoning and which should not be taken literally, and then those teachings which can be taken literally because there is no undermining or logical fallacy in accepting them literally. And so there is this understanding or division between the provisional teachings and the definitive teachings. This is only this only exists. This differentiation of the provisional and the definitive teachings only exists in Buddhism and not other religious traditions. And then today we have over 7 billion people on this earth, and over 1 billion are non-believers, and within them are atheists as well. And then amongst the followers of believers, some people put on the mask of religion but are corrupt. Last year, when Pope Francis became the Pope, he actually dismissed one German bishop. Why? Because he was living a very luxurious life, and the news came in the newspapers last year. So as a practitioner, a leader of Christianity, he must be teaching about giving teachings on contentment to other people. Of course, if you visit the Christian nunneries and monasteries, you will be able to see how simple they live. When you visit these monasteries and nunneries, they live a very simple and contented life in their own cells. And then some are actually living as hermits all their life. I once visited one French monastery. And so they said that usually they don't allow anybody into their monastery. And the discipline is that once somebody joins the monastery, they cannot leave the monastery compound. And when they die, their body will be buried in the monastery compound itself. And the abbot actually received me, and he was when he actually led me, I saw his feet, and he was actually barefoot, and cracks were there in his soul. And so, since they have to live this kind of Christian practitioners have to live a simple life with contentment, this German bishop must have been giving teachings and should have lived a simple life, giving such teachings to live a contented life to others. And therefore, when Francis found out that he lived a luxurious life, he actually dismissed this bishop. And Rinpoche here, Gaudin Rinpoche, and the abbots of the monasteries should also do likewise to your own monks in your monastery if they are living a very luxurious life. We have to think about the Dharma in general, take into account the preservation of the Dharma at large. And you have to tell these monks, thank you for living such a life. Now, please leave this monastery. And so this is how it's also done in the Gyutu and Gyume Tantric colleges. So whether you see other examples or not, you should look at the example of how Pope Francis, what Pope Francis did to the German bishop. And so we have to know the Dharma first and then apply them in practice. So what I wanted to say is that over 1 billion people are non-believers, and then about 6 billion are supposed to be believers, but amongst them there are people who do all kinds of things, which shows that something is lacking. Of course, each follower has a belief in their own religion. But what shows, what is indicated when you do not really practice what is taught in your teachings is that there's something is lacking. So the practice of love, compassion, contentment, self-discipline, if you really sincerely believe in them from the depth of your heart, then you will not do all kinds of things. Otherwise, you say something and do something else. When you are not sincere about what you profess to be following in terms of your religious tradition, and therefore, all 7 billion people on this earth, there is a shortage of the practice of morality. And so, when we were young, we have received great love and affection from our mother and others who have taken care of us. And the nature of human beings is such that because we were born from our mother and we are nurtured by our mother's milk, therefore, biologically, we are equipped with affection. And as human beings, we cannot live alone, but we need to live in a community with others, and therefore, love and affection actually pulls us together, whereas anger expels us apart. And therefore, since we are social animals, what keeps us together is love and affection. Therefore, these are very important for our life, for our survival. So some scientists have done some experiments with children of 2 or 3 years old, two or 3 years of age, who are not yet able to express themselves well. In their experiments, the scientists have shown some animations where they show the animations, the cartoons helping each other. And when they show this, these children, 2, 3-year-old children, become very happy and laugh. Whereas when the scientists actually showed somebody obstructing another kid in these animations, then the children also dislike this. And so they showed this animation to me. And so what this shows is that human nature is such that we appreciate love and affection, and we don't appreciate obstructions. So even though we have had experience, very intense experience of love and affection in our childhood, and when we were young, but as we grew up, because of the way we are educated, following the existing modern education system, which is oriented towards the external world material, And therefore, it lacks the means to nurture our love and compassion. And so with regard to morality, ethics, and so forth, these are left to the religions. And then most of the religious traditions just say that, such and such is said by such and such master, and we do not use reason and logic. And so, as human beings, we need love and compassion. If you have that, the individual will be happy, your family will be happy, your community will be happy. Sometimes people think that, if you meditate or cultivate love and compassion, it actually helps others and not oneself. But that's not the case. If you are full of love and compassion, your physical elements also become neutral or balanced. So even scientists say that if someone is constantly angry, then it disturbs the physical elements, the constituents. And also because of that, and then people also suffer stress and anxiety. And so in the last 10 years or so, American scientists experts have experimented with people in America about the benefit of love and compassion and the disadvantage of anxiety, fear, anger. And so they gave two, three weeks of training. And during those training, they are taught this. And before the training starts, they check the participants' blood pressure and also stress level. And then at the end of the 3 weeks or 2 weeks training, when they check these blood pressure and the stress again, they found that these participants have actually, the blood pressure has reduced and also stress has reduced, and then they become happier, and then they are more cordial. They have more cordial interaction with their colleagues. And so it's been about 10 years since the scientists have been doing this. And then also, in the modern schools education system, we have been talking about introducing this love and compassion in the school curriculum. We're not talking about religion or religious belief, but we are talking about introducing how anger and these negative emotions are harmful to oneself, one's health and so forth, and how loving kindness and compassion and so forth are beneficial. And so we have been thinking about introducing the secular ethics. In terms of secular ethics, these principles. And because if you talk about religion, and then it doesn't cover all 7 billion people on this earth. So next year, around February, we are also finalizing a draft curriculum that would be introduced in this modern school system so that it can cover such a curriculum, can cover the 7 billion people on this earth. All the religious traditions, whether we are Buddhists or Christians or non-Buddhist Hindus and Muslims or Jains and so forth, we have been praying so far, but we are not able to materialize or realize the goals. So how many centuries have we been praying as Tibetans? So as Buddhists, we need to increase the positive actions and deduce the negative actions in order to fulfill our goal. Otherwise, we would be almost following the teaching of the Buddha as if following the theistic religions, saying that, oh, Buddha, please help me for this and that. The Buddha would say, this is not possible because the sages do not wash away the sins of sentient beings. They do not remove the suffering of sentient beings with their hands. They do not transpose their realization into others. But by showing the truth of the reality, they liberate. And then we would have to say, okay, I'm sorry to the Buddha. And so, even in the theistic religious cases, the Creator God is seen as being nature of infinite love. But the problems that we face are created by people. If Jesus Christ were today here, and we request Him to please eliminate all these problems, He might also say, you created all these problems. And so, what we need today is to increase peace in the world. Because we have this intelligence, we need to use it properly and educate our people to be aware of the hygiene or health of our emotions, just as we do take care of our physical health and hygiene. So, of course, with regard to this secular ethics education, I have support from the experts, the modern scholars and ethics, scholars and scientists. Of course, there are religious people who also support them, this as well. And so, something which can be accepted by all 7 billion people, and that can actually cover all 7 billion people, is the education or promotion of love and compassion through education. This is necessary. So for all 7 billion people, if we can do that, then from beginning with the kindergarten level, as children progress along the school system, if we could actually also deepen the teachings and the practice of love and compassion progressively, that would be very helpful. That's why we have taken the aspect of signs from Buddhist literature and extracted material from the Kanjur and Tenjur. So otherwise, people who don't follow Buddhism, if they are told to study the Buddhist literature, they would not like that. And then we cannot impose religious teachings to schools. And so if we could actually have something which can benefit the whole of the world, all 7 billion people, by decreasing the negative emotions and increasing the positive ones through education, what we need is we need first to introduce the workings of the mind and mental factors as we do study during the study of collected topics in the monastic institutions. And we also talk about the causality that such and such cause is a direct cause, and such is an indirect cause, and these give rise to such and such effect, and so forth. So, of course, the Kanjur and Tenjur over 300 volumes, we can keep in our monasteries. We do keep them in our monasteries, but the aspect of science, which is contained in these volumes, if we could take them out and extract them, and then compile a book, and we said that it would be really beneficial for the entire humanity. And therefore, we have, for that purpose, we have compiled a two-volume book, which was released in Ladakh during the Kalachakra initiation. And then the middle volume is also printed. At some point during these days, we'll release this book as well. And so, for the 7 billion people on this earth, we should see how much as Buddhists we can actually help and benefit the 7 billion people on this earth. We all talk about disciplining our mind, subduing our mind. Of course, through prayer, we have been trying to do that until now, but we have not been able to accomplish the goal. But by introducing the negative and the positive aspects of the mind and showing how to develop the positive ones and decrease the negative ones, through education, we can actually introduce this to others. And therefore, if we could have more education on psychology, it would be really helpful in promoting love and compassion for the entire humanity. So I'm not saying that I can do so much this and that. I am not doing these things in order to gain fame. I pray. We all pray for all sentient beings' happiness. If we want to be practical about what we pray, of course, the rest of the world systems, we talk about the billion world system or so forth, and the rest of the world systems are not directly related to us, maybe not directly relevant, but this particular world, the 7 billion people, if we could help 7 billion people on this earth, which is practical, then we must do what we pray for, which is may all sentient beings have happiness. And so I usually say that I'm as one of the 7 billion people on this earth. I never think that I'm somebody very special. I always tell that I do not think that I'm the Dalai Lama, His Holiness the Dalai Lama. I am a simple Buddhist monk, and I'm a human being, I say. I don't think any... And so it is very important for us to think about the entire humanity. If we are practitioners of bodhicitta, not only should we pray, we say that in order to benefit all sentient beings, may I become a Buddha. So for that goal of Buddhahood, we need to put into practice what we need to do from this time on. So this is one thing I wanted to say. And then amongst the believers, we have many different religious traditions. There are maybe 10 or 15 different major religious traditions. And within this, there are two groups, the theistic religions and the non-theistic ones. As Brahmana Vartika by Dharmakirti says, there are those religious traditions which believe in a creator God and those which do not believe in such. And the theistic religious traditions, non-theistic ones, are non-theistic the Sankhya school and Jainism and Buddhism. These do not believe in the Creator God. Recently, I met a Parsi scholar, a practitioner, who told me that in India, Sankhya started around 3,000 years ago, but in Arab and in Iran, particularly Persia, the Zoroastrianism started, Parsi religion, Zoroastrianism, started around 3,000 years ago. And then from there evolved Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And so they came at the same time, Sankhya and the Zoroastrianism developed around the same time in India and Arab region, respectively. And then there's Egyptian civilization also. There is also talk about some religion. And also, it seems they do also talk about reincarnation, rebirth. I didn't have very detailed discussions about these. And then there's a Chinese civilization, which is over 5,000. But I do not know about the religious belief in that civilization. So from what I heard, we have the theistic religious tradition evolving with the Zoroastrianism in the West, and then in India, we have the Sankhya school. The non-theistic Sankhya school started first. And from then, other religious traditions also developed. And then the theistic Sankhya school also started, perhaps thinking that some scholars thinking that, oh, perhaps it's better to actually bow down to, give in to some creator God. Because there are so many things going on in the world, in the universe, people find it very difficult to explain them, and therefore they say this is mystery, it's a mystery, and therefore it's easier to just trust that they are created by some God. And so this is what has happened. And then we also talk about the past Buddha, such as the Dipankara and Karkuchanda, and Kanaka, and so forth. And so we need to really think about whether there had really been such Buddhas in the past, because we talk about them in relation to a certain time span, talking about when people lived, infinite life span and countless lifespans, and when people lived 20,000 years and so forth. And so we need to think whether we can should take them literally or not. So I've been meeting many people from different religious traditions and from other disciplines. What we need to know is that we really need to reflect on the teaching of the Buddha. So when it really comes to talking about the attainment of definitive goodness, we sometimes need to see within that context also whether certain teachings can be taken literally or not. Then, in terms of certain conventional things, we must see whether they can be taken also as literally or not. So for those following the theistic religions, of course, they believe that everything is created by God. Of course, they have their own significance. They are beneficial. So in these theistic religions, God the Creator is seen as infinite love and therefore full of love. And therefore, because of that, such a Creator has created us. God, they could also have the trust that the God could not have created us for some bad purpose. He must have created us for some good purpose. So as we talk about genes that go from the father or the parents to the children, likewise, for these theistic religious believers, because we are created by God, the Creator, therefore we also are seen to have some seed of that love of God. And if we actually follow the will of God, they say that we would finally, after death, reach the heavenly realm. And so it's a really simple way of explaining the religion, but it's really helpful for them. And then amongst the other religious traditions which are theistic, there are other like Hinduism, which believe in reincarnation, but ultimately when you trace the origin of a whole universe, they say the universe came from Brahma. But within having said that, the origin, then they also call talk about reincarnation as well. And then amongst the non-theistic religions, we have Buddhism. And so whatever benefit and whatever happiness and so forth or bad experiences we have, they come from our own actions, our own karma. So some people in India who believe in caste system, they say that the lower castes are destined to suffer and to be in that because they were born in the lower castes. And because of their own karma, and therefore the new Buddhists do not like to hear the term karma, because these Brahmins, people born in the Brahmin caste, have been saying this kind of thing and discriminating against them, against the lower caste. So, as Buddhists, what we say is that things come from causes and conditions. And then amongst the non-theistic religions, for example, non-theistic Sankhya say that the conscious being, self, who a Hindu Swamiji, I met them 2 years ago, and he was a really good scholar, and he also knew the Mula Madhyamaka Karika by Master Nagarjuna. And he said that there is no beginning nor end to this conscious self. And with regard to So I met a living Hindu teacher, and then Jainism also doesn't believe in the beginning and end of self, whereas Buddhism doesn't believe in an independent self, because we take rebirth. They say that there is an Atman, which is single, autonomous and permanent. And even the Christians also say this, that once somebody dies, the body remains in the coffin, and then the self or the soul goes either to heaven or hell. And it is only Buddhism which teaches selflessness. No other religion teaches that. And within Buddhism, according to the subtlety of explanation of selflessness, we have different degrees of subtlety of understanding the selflessness. And the subtlest understanding comes from the Madhyamaka tradition. And so there's no other way we can interpret what is explained or asserted by the Madhyamaka. And so, amongst the religions, we have those theistic and non-theistic, and within them also there are those which assert a soul or Atman or self. And Buddhism says that there's no self, independent self, but a self is designated on the basis of the continuity of the mind stream or consciousness. And then within Buddhism, we have the Pali tradition, which is spread in Burma, Thailand, and Cambodia, and so forth, and Sri Lanka, where they follow the three collections of the teachings and do their practices of the three trainings. With regard to Vinaya practice, the monastic discipline, the Pali tradition has a very good practice. The Pali tradition has very good texts, which are not translated into Tibetan either. It seems there are certain texts in Pali, which are not there in the Tibetan translations. So we have talked about translating them when we meet these followers of the Theravada tradition. We have a common practice, which is the Vinaya. So on the whole, of course, the practice of Vinaya is very good in these Pali the regions where Pali tradition has spread. But of course, there may be some mischievous people. And then with regard to Sanskrit tradition, from India, where it originated, it spread to China. But it seems that Thailand also had this Mahayana teaching once spread there, and also Tantra. So one friend, once I met him, he offered me Vajra, which he said he found in Thailand. So it was a Vajra with nine spokes, which is called the Wrathful Vajra. So it seems that there was Buddhist Tantra which spread in Thailand in the past. I don't know about non-Buddhist Tantra. And so, and then in the past, India also had Tantra. And so, since when we should not despise the Theravada practitioners and followers, they have very good practice of Vinaya and Buddhist practice. And then, with regard to the Sanskrit tradition, that spread to Tibet, and the Sanskrit tradition followed by Master Nagarjuna and so forth. In the Nalanda tradition, it first spread to China, and then it spread to Japan, Korea, Vietnam. And so they do have the first three sets of Tantra teachings. It doesn't look like they have the highest Yoga Tantra teachings spread there. And then in the 7th century, Buddhism first spread to Tibet, and mainly it spread during the time of the Tisong Detsen, the Tibetan emperor. As I usually say, this Tibetan Buddhism is the Nalanda tradition, because in Tibet, during the time of Songtsen Gampo, and it is said that although we do not have very detailed explanation, but it is said there were certain texts like Bangong Chagya and so forth during Songtsen Gampo's time. But during the time of Tisong Detsen, Master Shanda Rakshita was invited to Tibet by the Tibetan emperor. And then in order to help and assist Master Shanda Rakshita, the Tibetan emperor also invited Guru Padmasambhava, Lobun Rinpoche. And so that was the main time when Buddhism was established in Tibet. So we usually divide the Savatantrika Madhyamaka system into the Sutrantrika Savatantrika and the Yogacara Savatantrika Madhyamaka. And this later was actually founded by Master Shanda Rakshita himself. It is not easy to actually start one's own philosophical school. And he was a follower of Master Nagarjuna, which is to say that he was a Madhyamaka follower of Madhyamaka system. And then while following him, he also followed the Chittamatra system. And so there is this ornament of the Madhyamaka written by him that we can actually see and read. And also he has written the Tatuv Samgraha, Compendium of Epistemology. And then his disciple, Master Kamala Shinla, also we always know him. He also wrote the Bhavanakrama and the a two-volume huge volumes, two-volume commentary on the difficult points of Tatov Samgraha. And so these two masters were really great scholars of, and particularly scholars of epistemology. And so we have a saying in Tibetan, the yoked necks of, or crossed necks of two lions, line of Madhyamaka and line of epistemology. And perhaps this expression evolved during the time of, was perhaps coined by Chandrakshita. I suspect he did that. And then he was the main person who took responsibility of studying the Dharma and also motivating the Tibetans to make themselves self-sufficient in studying the Dharma in their own language. And therefore, he instructed the Tibetans to translate the Buddha Dharma into Tibetan. And somebody told me that Chandrakshita himself actually studied Tibetan. So generally speaking, Indian scholars say that Master Chandrakshita, actually when he was in his 70s, mid-70s, he went to Tibet. And then he lived 900 years, I mean, our Tibetan scholars have this saying that he lived 900 years. But in any case, he was a great top scholar of Nalanda University with so many students who were also great scholar. And so he was someone who was invited by the Tibetan emperor at that time. So if we reflect on Chandrakshita, Chandrakshita used to have vegetables, I mean vegetarian meals like dal and vegetables and so forth. But perhaps the Tibetan in Tibet, we didn't have them, and so he had to take the Tibetan staple food like tsampa, using tsampa, making tsampa dough, and to eat them. And so he must have felt a hardship when he was in Tibet, but at the invitation of the Tibetan emperor, although he had reached such an age, in India, of course, he must have the access to bullock carts and so forth, but in Tibet, we didn't have them. The Tibetan emperors may not have them, bullock carts to for him to transport. And so When I hear and think about Chandrakshita having come to Tibet, studied the Tibetan, it gives me some strange feeling, emotional. And therefore, with his help, we have a Buddhism which has the entire teaching of Buddhism, including the basic vehicle, Mahayana Sutra and Tantra. And so such a tradition, with regard to such a tradition, of course, I have met with many different scholars of and practitioners of, and also professors of Buddhism from different regions and countries. And when I think about them, having met them, nobody has such a vast teaching of Buddhism like we have. And then not only that we have a vast teaching of the Buddha, but we also studied rigorously for over 20 years, 20, 30 years, using logic and reasoning, epistemology. We should feel grateful to our past masters for setting up the curriculum of study that we have today, like beginning with the collected views, where we have also the small collected views, and then the medium, intermediate, and the big collected topics, and then so on. And so, these texts were written inside Tibet. The Tibetan scholars are marvelous, wonderful. And also, we study these texts in our own language. And not only that, we have vast teaching, but also we have a very, it is very profound as well, a deep. Of course, we have Chinese brothers and sisters, Buddhist brothers and sisters. They have very good practice. And these Chinese Buddhist brothers and sisters take to vegetarian food. Very nice. And so in Canada recently, I visited a Vietnamese, U.S., Boston, Vietnamese, and I think, and so they served lunch. I had my lunch with a few of the Vietnamese monks, and we chatted while taking our meal. It was very nice. So in 1965, at one point, I gave up a non-vegetarian meal for nearly 2 years without taking any eggs as well, but only vegetarian. And then at the advice of some Indian, I started taking lots of nuts, and then I actually suffered, and my whole body became I suffered jaundice, and my whole body became yellow, my eyes and nails, and then in retrospect, I tell people that at that time I really became a living Buddha. And so, because of that illness, the Indian, the Tibetan traditional doctors, as well as the Indian doctors, asked me not to take the nuts and also to stick to the original diet, because the new diet, non-veg diet, will not suit your physical constituent. And so I do my best to have a vegetarian meal. And in these monastic institutions like this, you have, from the common kitchen, you only give the vegetarian meals. But I have heard that the monks, the local restaurants actually do good business because of non-vegetarian meal, because for your monks. And then when I take meal with the Theravada monks, they do also take non-vegetarian meal. Because as bhikshus, we cannot demand meals from others. Whoever offer us meal, we have to take whatever they give. We have to accept them. And so I told these Vietnamese monks that today I'm taking vegetarian meal, and while taking meal, I am at... I stick to Theravada tradition. And so in the Chinese tradition, they have a very good tradition of taking vegetarian meal. So so there are mentions of certain types of meal being should be free from the three faults and so forth. So it would be best, of course, if we could stick to vegetarian meal. So the Chinese do not have to go through all these troubles of having to answer why the Buddhist monks take non-vegetarian meal. instead of vegetarian. And then Tangsan Lama, Xuanzang, must have come into contact mainly with Dharmapala, who was a Chittamatra philosopher, but he also practiced Tantra. And from the point of view of Guhyasamaja, when you reach the isolation of mind, and then you actually view of emptiness. And so, as Panjin Yeshi or somebody has said this, and so Xuanzang was familiar with Madhyamasa Nagarjuna's Mula Madhyamaka Karika as well. And when he comments on that, then he comments on that from, explains it from the point of view of Chittamatra. So, I don't know if the Buddhists make up 1 billion population in the world or not. So in China, there are 400 million. So studying the very vast scriptures, many number of scriptures and vast teachings, that also by using logic and reasoning, this tradition is only there in the Tibetans, with the Tibetans, and not no other tradition. And that too, through learning in our own language and not resorting to any other language. And so today, Tibetan is the only language which can explain thoroughly, completely, the teaching of the Buddha. Sanskrit has become a more or less a scholar's language. And Pali, of course, doesn't have these vast explanations like we have. And therefore, the lay people and school children who have come here, many of you have come here, you must take interest in learning our own language well. Of course, with regard to modern subjects, Tibetan is not yet etiquette. But when it comes to explaining Buddhist philosophy and the practice, the best language today, living language, is Tibetan. Therefore, you must also think of preserving our own language. And also, with regard to Buddhism, if you are interested in Buddhism, you also must think of preserving our own language, Buddhism, and it's our language. And then with regard to teaching of Mahayana, even before Master Nagarjuna came, there were people who said that Mahayana was not teaching of the Buddha, and therefore Master Nagarjuna and also Bhava Viveka and Shandideva have actually argued for Mahayana being teaching of the Buddha. Even today we have people who say that Mahayana is not teaching of the Buddha. And then there are people who, I mean, quite strong in saying that the Tantra is not also Buddhist teaching. It has actually come from Hinduism. So this is something that we need to know. There are people who say that Tibetan Buddhism is not a pure Buddhism because it has Mahayana, and then amongst the Mahayana followers of Mahayana tradition, there are people who say that because there is Tantra in Tibetan Buddhism, it's not, which is not at the Buddhist teaching. So we must be able to actually prove to them that the Mahayana is teaching of the Buddha. that Tibetan Buddhism is also the teaching of Buddhism. So we cannot just use quotations to support and to challenge them, to respond to them. We need to use logic and reasoning. For that purpose, we need to understand the presentation and explanation of the basis, the path, and the result. And if you ask in the Pali tradition, ask about the Pali tradition, Master Nagarjuna says that how can you actually become a Buddha by following the same path, the 37 harmonies of enlightenment, which is also the same path leading to arhatship. And so we need to actually go into proving the validity of cessation, nirvana, that it is possible. So if you only follow the Pali tradition, you will find lots of logical fallacies as well, because you are resorting only to scriptural authority. Of course, they teach the Four Noble Truths. And then by knowing the teaching of the Four Noble Truths based on reason and logic, as we find in Dhammakirti's Pramanavartika and in no other text, then we should know how we fall into samsara and have suffering through the origin, and how we can cease the suffering and reach true cessation, and also through the path, the true path. And so we can do that by understanding that the teaching of Mahayana teaching is the teaching of the Buddha. And also we have to basically come to the point of saying, come down to the same point of saying that these negative emotions that we have their own counter forces. Of course, love can counter anger. And attachment is countered by meditation on filthy nature of body and so forth. But by understanding the two truths well, then we can understand emptiness well. And then that can actually shake the root of grasping a true existence. Without being able to shake that root of grasping a true existence, we will not be able to overcome the rest of the negative emotions merely by applying some temporary measures. And therefore, if we think along these lines, then we would be able to also think about the Mahayana being teaching of the Buddha. And also, on the basis of understanding the four Buddha bodies, we can also come to the conclusion that the Tantra is the teaching of the Buddha. So otherwise, without really good reasons, we would have to actually, when someone criticizes and says that, oh, Mahayana is not the teaching of Buddha, we wouldn't have any answer, and we would just spit on the person. And then, on the other hand, out of desperation, we would also only have to say, please don't say that. You know, we don't have any other means to counter that kind of challenge. So, of course, I'm saying something on the side, but we need to know this. And then those of you, the Westerners and other people who are taking interest in Tibetan Buddhism, you should also know this. Of course, all the religious traditions are very good. I have very good friends from all these religious traditions. They're very beneficial. I respect them sincerely. But when it comes to using logic and checking the teachings through reason and logic, then we'll find lots of logical fallacies in them. And then I have an Indian friend who is a very good follower of a theistic religious tradition. And so he sincerely asked me, many of you may have heard this, but he said that God created everything in the world, in the universe, animate and inanimate objects. And but amongst the creations of the world, there are so many bad people. Why did God create them? And then I half joke, but I told him that, of course, God created hell realm, and there must be people who must go to hell as well. Otherwise, you won't have anybody going there. The hell will remain empty. I told him that. Although God is said to be almighty, all-powerful, omniscient, and infinite love, and so forth, we can still find these kind of logical fallacies. In Ngagrim Chemo, towards the beginning of Ngagrim Chemo, there are a few passages where Master Tsongkhapa says that the theistic religions, other religions, have these internal contradictions, logical inconsistencies within them with regard to basis, path, and result. And therefore, Master Aryadeva says that those who have doubt about the teaching of the Buddha with regard to the obscure phenomenon, then for them, they must be taught emptiness or explained emptiness. So with regard to explaining Buddhism, so with regard to devotion to Guru, it is not a means to introduce Buddhism to someone who is a beginner to Buddhism. And therefore, Master Nagarjuna, in his writings, praised the Buddha for teaching dependent origination. He says the Buddha is the best of the teachers for teaching that whatever is dependent is free of these eight extremes. And therefore, the Buddha is the incomparable teacher. So if I may say, the non-Buddhist traditions also have very good guru devotion. And then with regard to the preciousness of human life, even the Christianity, for example, talk about humans having soul and the animals do not. But with regard to Four Noble Truths, which is unique to Buddhism, a unique presentation, explanation in Buddhism, Brahmanavartika says, the one who has actually seen what are to be discarded and what are to be adopted, in other words, with regard to primarily to the main, the principal teaching, since the Buddha is unmistaken with regard to that, so when you are able to prove that the cessation is possible through logic, by showing what are to be adopted and what are to be discarded, you see that these teaching of the cessation and the path to counter the suffering and this origin, you can find that the Buddha is incontrovertible. And when you are able to see that he is incontrovertible in terms of them, then the main thrust of the teaching, then the rest of the teaching, which are show the obscure phenomena, can be also inferred through logic. And so with regard to Lamrim, it is based on, modeled on the former Kadamba master's Lamrim teachings. And then when it comes to explaining the rest of the practices, the Master Nagarjuna, Master Tsongkhapa, doesn't go through the emptiness from the Madhyamaka point of view except in this insight section. And then in Lamrim Chemo, Master Tsongkhapa says that the Four Noble Truths is something which is taught in all the scriptures of Mahayana and Hinayana. And therefore, we must understand the teaching based on these Four Noble Truths and also lead disciples in that way. So this is a wisdom, a special wisdom shared by Master Tsongkhapa. And therefore, we have to introduce Buddhism based on the Four Noble Truths. So when we talk about the true cessation and true path, we have to make the differentiation between the two truths. As Nagarjuna says, all the teachings of the Buddhas are based on the two truths. And so we have to understand the Four Noble Truths on the basis of understanding the two truths. And so this is very important to use. While using logic and reason, we have to use the logical pattern which is given in Pramana Vartika. And when it comes to explaining the gist of the teaching, the true truths, then we have to use the Madhyamaka logic as well, the Madhyamaka teaching. And on the basis of understanding the true truths, we need to draw understanding of the Four Noble Truths. As it is said in Abhisamaya Alamkara as well, where it talks about the accomplishment and then the truths and so forth, dealing with two and four truths. And then with regard to Lamrim itself, we have the traditions of the Kadam scholastics, Kadam pith instruction, and then the Lamrim lineages. So when it comes to teaching and explaining Buddhism, we need to follow the Kadam scholastic, Kadam tradition, which follow the, with regard to this, there are the six texts, which are the Jataka Mala and then the Udana Varga, and then the Bodhisattva Bhumi and the Sutra, Mahayana Sutra Alamkara, which are slightly more profound. The first two texts, we do not use much logic in them. And then we have the Shiksha Samuchaya and Bodhisattva Charya Avatara by Master Shandideva, although Shandideva's the later text and has logic used in it. The other text doesn't have much logic. And so I guess that the Kadam scholastic, Kadam tradition actually led the disciples through the explanation of the, what are known in the Abhisamaya Alamkara as the 10 instructions. So this is an introduction to the Buddhism.
So the term Shama is referred to a nomadic place. So since Shama Rinpoche came from that nomadic place called Shama, therefore he's referred to as Shama Rinpoche. There is a photo of Shama Rinpoche in the palace of the 13th Dalai Lama in Nobilinga. I used to stay in that small bedroom, the palace of the 13th Dalai Lama. And I've seen there is a picture portrait of Shama Rinpoche. And there is also a portrait of Padre Rinpoche Rinpoche. And I do not remember that there is another the portrait of Dan Sanchez Rinpoche, which looks a little bit way too Rinpoche. So maybe the 13th Dalai Lama, when he was in the Eastern Tibet, so he might have received the teaching. So the lineage of the transmission of this Lam Rim tradition is quite rare, but I have taken a lot of interest and I have received this transmission from Amdo Geshe Rinpoche. The sun radiating light of goodness and magnificent, laying out the points of guided meditation of the path of bliss, a treatise on the path to enlightenment. Equaling the expanse of the space of knowledge in the three times, magnificent with the sacred light of excellent wisdom, from the depths of my heart I bow to my kind master. So maybe the master here is Agu Sherab Gyatso, a scholar of the Eastern Tibet. With the sweet dew of the air whispered instructions of the good intelligence, the host of honeybees sing the melodious song of scripture and logic. I once again recollect the infinitely vast ripening and liberative altruistic deeds. So maybe I have to recite the refuge taking prayer. It is also the practice before listening to any teaching. We need to have a very pure motivation. And also from the teacher's point of view, we need to set up a very pure motivation, not expecting about the expecting anything in return, and also a very pure mind without relating to eight worldly affairs. So even from the disciple's point of view, it is not to be pride of having received instruction or a teaching from Dalai Lama. There is a also in our society that I receive this teaching from this great Lama and that these are my disciples. So this is are all very egoistic egoistic mind. So this is, should not be the motivation. So when you receive the teaching from Gyawar Rinpoche Dalai Lama, so maybe you might feel very proud that you received the teaching from Dalai Lama. So this is not the motivation that we need here. So with the pure motivation and also with the subdued mind, it is not something we are doing a service to Buddha. The reason is we all need happiness and do not want suffering. Therefore, the source of the happiness is one a calm mind. And we need to rely upon the instructions in order to have a very calm mind. So this is the teaching which comprises of the condensed meaning of all the three baskets of the Buddha's teaching. Without going into very extensive, so the Lam Rim teaching is the tradition of the Lam Rim teaching is something which contains the condensed meaning of all the teaching. So maybe I'm speaking too much. So there are some kind of teaching which really frightens the local people. So you might say faith in the God, otherwise you will be born in hell. So this is a kind of frightening the people. So out of the fear, some people take refuge in the God. So some of you might have heard, maybe some know. In Eastern Tibet, there was an abbot of a monastery. And the local people really revered him and pay respect him. And one of the villagers came to see the Buddha, see the abbot, and he was not there at that time. And one of the attendants of the abbot was there, and the villager asked him, "Where is the abbot?" And he said, "The abbot is not here," and asked him where the abbot went. And he gave the answer that the abbot went to frighten the people, the local people. So the teaching of the Lord Buddha has to be the holistic point of view from the Four Noble Truths, and based on the Four Noble Truths, then the two truths comes. And with that, we need to have an experience within ourselves that the liberation is possible. And it's stated in the Buddhacharya Avatara, even though we have the mind to not wishing the suffering, but we always go in pursuit of the suffering. And happiness we always wish, but we always destroy the cause of the happiness. So even though we wish to have happiness, but we never indulge in the cause of the suffering. And the real origin or the cause of the suffering are the wisdom understanding, the selflessness, and the impermanence. And we have to strive hard to understand and work towards this. And the hatred, competition, delusions are the source of the suffering and unhappy mind. But even though these are the source of the suffering and the source of the unhappiness and the disturbed mind, but we end up always going towards and in the pursuit of this mind. So therefore, it is very important to have that refuge in the Buddha. So without having a refuge in the three jewels, we won't be considered as a Buddhist. And without having the mind generated for enlightenment, we won't be included in the Mahayana tradition. So with the short version of the refuge-taking prayer for three terms, from the master's point of view also motivate and meditate about the three jewels, and same from the disciples. And there are two ways of translating through the collections of the generosity and so on, and by the merits accumulated by the through the generosity and so on. But then there is also, like, by the merits of listening to the teaching. So even though there are many ways, but I think it's best to say is by the collection that we accumulated from the generosity and so on. So even though in real term, the wisdom part may not be listed there. So when we speak about the term I, that by the collection of accumulated collection of merit I, so we need to think about the concept of the I, that there is no inherent existence of the self if you search for it from the whole body, from one's head to the toe. So from the aggregates, without depending upon one's form and the five aggregates, there is not a self that really exists as it appears to our mind. So if one have a really slight understanding about the emptiness, then when the term the I comes, then we have to think about this term I as just the existence of mere designated. And also that even though there are a lot of distraction things and the phenomena around us, but then there is not even a slightest reality in them. And similarly, that when we analyze the self, there is not a self which is inherent existence in the form of our aggregates, our form. Then if those aggregates itself are not the self, then who is the self? So similarly, the Lord Buddha himself also not the aggregates, and the aggregates are also not the self. So therefore, when we recite the term self, then we need to realize and actually contemplate about such an identification of the self as an inner existence. With this, we all recite together. I go for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha until I become enlightened by the collection of one's generosity and so on. May I become Buddha in order to benefit the sentient beings. May I become a Buddha in order to attain enlightenment. So we will continue from the next stanza. In the endless ocean of virtuous deeds beyond limit, your beautiful, perfect form of a complete spear appear exclusively from which you sprinkle for the nectar of wisdom. To you, full moon amongst the sage teachers, my obeisance. So the Buddha refers here the one undefeated teacher. So there is very importance in the term undefeated, which is the supreme of all the teachers. Ajita and Manjugosha, the embodiments of compassion and wisdom, respectively, and Nagarjuna and Asanga, the best lamps illuminating the profound and extensive paths, are both to them and their teaching lineages. Clarifying the sweet, clear river course of the land of snows, which has been polluted by the dirt of misunderstanding, you became the trailblazer of the unmistakable and complete path, O glorious Divamkara Shri Jana. Through the 100,000 rays of unprecedented wisdom, you outshine the 10 million constellation of sweet tigers. I bow to you with highest reverence, which is Manjushri, Avalokiteshvara, and Vajrapani. Not satiated with the well of partiality, you practiced and experienced the essence of the ocean of Sutra and Tantra, and journeyed to the deathless level of eternally blissful state. I bow to you, scholar adept masters and their successors. The primordial wisdom body of all the victorious ones, reappearing in their dance of manifestations for the fortunate beings without discrimination. I beseech you all whose kindness is unmatched. What are and what are not the means by which we are led to this cycle of existence, the city of sea monsters filled with the turbulent waves of suffering, and to quickly cross it to reach the great palace of omniscience. This is again the inquisitive wise ones must engage in over and over again. So here the guided instruction on the stages of the path to enlightenment, which is the main part treated by all the victors of the three times, which contains the essential meaning of the 84,000 scriptures into the paths to be practiced. He's explaining two paths, how to rely on a teacher, the root of the path, and having relied upon him, the steps of training the mind. The first of these has two parts. Regarding the first, there are six preliminaries. First, cleaning your residence and arranging the representations of body, speech, and mind with respect to them in general. Whichever activity you proceed to do, that is hearing, reflecting, meditating, and practicing, it is very essential to amend your motivation. As such, at the outset, think like this. I've gained this human life, and having struck 50 or so, have spent over half of my lifespan until now. Yet so far, I have only indulged in the activities of this life alone by engaging in the means of food, clothing, honor, wealth, respect, and fame, but nothing of a sincere spiritual practice to help me in the next life. So if I were to die at this juncture, this human life of leisure and resources would have been spent meaninglessly. That I have not died yet and have this opportunity to gain imprints of the graduated path to enlightenment today must be due to the kindness of the Three Jewels. As for the future, since unfavorable conditions abound everywhere, there is no certainty when I will die and if I were to be born in the lower realms of existence, there will be unbearable suffering there. Not only that, but if I were to waste away my rebirth in the higher realm, despite gaining it once or so and miss the opportunity for Dharma. So next is explaining about the nature of liberation. Identification of liberation. So it's very important to identify what is liberation or nirvana. Thinking about the Four Noble Truths, then we need to have a positive mind that there is a possibility of a liberation that we can attain. And also within us, that we ourselves can attain liberation. With such a mind, then we need to have a wish to attain a liberation, a kind of a great joy, not out of fear. So seeing the real or knowing the identification of the liberation, then we need to generate a mind aspiring for liberation. So we're seeing this, imagine the places, even the palm of your hand, brought in the nature of varieties of precious materials, covered in lots of heavenly flowers, spread out with fine powdered gold. Surrounded by strings of jewel trees, in the center of which imagine and celestial mansion made of the seven kinds of gems, similar to the design of a pure land with its residence. Then make this aspiration which, having purified thus, may mine and others' twofold defilement and their remnant imprint be cleansed, may it be the cause to achieve the extraordinary pure lands at the resultant twofold Buddha bodies of Nirmakaya and Sambhogakaya. Whether you put representations of the holy body, speech and mind anew or already have been there on the altar, think that the objects of refuge are inseparably with this representation. Thus, thinking this way, think that you have left imprints in your mind to accomplish the holy body, speech and mind of the objects of refuge within your own mindstream. To announce that the text that I'm reading now is a partial translation of the Shaman Lamrim. It is available for your download on the Janjo Lamrim website. Second, arranging the uncontrived offerings in an exquisite manner while reciting the clouds of offering Dharani formula, arrange the flowers according to the practice and lineage, and imagine them to become potent with the power to produce pristine bliss within the objects of refuge. Third, taking refuge and arousing bodhicitta while seated in the correct manner on a comfortable cushion. After sitting on a standard throne or seat in a behavior concordant with the concentration practice, such as the eight future posture of Virochana, when one examines well one's own mind stream and finds that thoughts of desire, aversion of ignorance, for example, thought to pursue honor and respect actively arising in one's mind, then it is an improper motivation. Therefore, whilst exhaling from both nostrils, imagine that such bad thoughts, conception, as well as all non-virtues and their remnant imprints go out in the form of black smoke and disappear into the empty space. Whilst inhaling through the right nostrils, imagine the merit fields from whom all the excellent qualities of wisdom, compassion, and power of all the masters, the victorious ones, and their spiritual offsprings, and visualize come in the form of white light and enter your heart, and thus you actualize a special virtuous consciousness. Being mindful of rough structure of the nature, order, and number of whichever meditation object you are engaged, which you have ascertained through your past study and reflection, then make a strong determination to carry out these meditations correctly without straying from them at all cost, with the impact of mindfulness and introspection. In general, since beginningless time and until now, I've been in the cycle of existence, samsara, and in particular have been in the bad existence infinitely, making them my permanent home while suffering unbearably in them. Apart from that, I haven't had the opportunity to meditate on a dharma like this before. Now at this time, I have found this human body of leisure and resources owing to the power of my master's kindness and the three jewels. I have met with the teaching of the Buddha. I have taken under the care of my holy virtuous spiritual friends who have given me the profound and extensive instructions. I have the freedom to practice. While this is the situation with me now, if I did not secure a safe heaven now with all the might of a human person, then I would have to undergo the unbearable sufferings of the samsara and lower realms of existence. In fact, as long as I am unable to cut the flow of involuntary birth that is the result of my karmic actions and disturbing emotions, no matter whichever of the six types of existence I am born into, I will not be beyond the reality of suffering. So till here, the six preliminary practices and having set of motivation. And the next is about visualizing one's object of refuge. In the space before you, directly at the level of your mind eyebrows, visualize a huge and high precious jewel throne supported by eight lions. In the center of the throne is a small lion throne on which is a multicolored lotus. So the precious jewel throne supported by eight lions, sorry. In the center of the throne is a small lion throne on which is a multicolored lotus, sun and moon, cushions on which is one's own kind teacher in the form of Shakyamuni Buddha, golden in color, with his crown, one face, two hands, the right hand in gesture holding an alms bowl filled with nectar. His body is covered with three beautiful Dharma saffron robes, and it is clear and luminous. He is sitting in the watcher cross-legged position, hallowed within the light emanating from his body. Beams of light matching the number of gurus radiate from his heart toward his back, above his body, and on their tips are lion thrones upon which is lotus. They are surrounded by the masters of Tantra such as Goya Samaja, Chakra Samavara, Vajra Bhairava, the 16 concentric drops of Kadam tradition, and so on. To my root guru's right, on the tip of the radiated light rays, are seated on the lion throne with the lotus, sun, and moon cushions, Lord Maitreya, surrounded by the lineage masters of the extensive contact lineage, such as Asanga. and so on. To his left, on the tip of the rays of light, are seated upon a lion throne with a lotus, sun and moon cushions, Venerable Manjugosha, surrounded by the lineage masters of the profound view lineage, surrounded by Nagarjuna, and so on. In front of him, on a lion throne, on the tip of emanated rays of light, and upon a lotus, sits my kindred guru, surrounded by teachers with whom I have direct dharma connection. On the huge throne in the front of the mighty sage is Vajrabhairava. To his right is Guhya Samaja. On his left is Chakra Samvara. Behind him is Kala Chakra, and in the empty space between them are the rest of the assembly of the highest yoga deities beside one another. Surrounding them are the deities of Yoga Tantra, such as Vajradhatu and Suravidya, who are surrounded by the deities of Performance Tantra. Or else you can visualize three lineages of the teaching, extensive, profound, and practice. Or others, with the mighty sage, the Lord Buddha in the center, and your root and lineage teachers surrounding him. Outside them are the meditational deities and so forth as gone above. Imagine yourself being surrounded by all the sentient beings of the six types of beings with your father and mother in the main, and have a clear idea of the practice of taking refuge in this way. I and all my mother sentient beings have experienced various miseries since time beginningless in the samsara, particularly in the lower realms of existence. If you could reach the end point without cultivating the path, but merely by undergoing suffering, I should be liberated by now. Since it is difficult to estimate how long I would have to be reborn, it is difficult for me to know the end of suffering and fathom its depth. Otherwise, I would have to undergo again all kinds of suffering of samsara in general and the three lower realms of existence in particular. The merit field in front of me has the power to save me from all these miseries because they, in the beginning, cultivated and generated the warm heart to serve sentient beings. In the middle, they engage in the infinitely incredible difficult practices. And finally, they attain the complete, perfect Buddhahood, due to which they possess all the qualities. And a mind which sees simultaneously and direct knowledge of everything, and the multiplicity of phenomena, and their actual way of existence. Therefore, I and all of the sentient beings have none other than you, O three jewels, to rely on from now until we achieve enlightenment. Hence, whatever your life circumstances may be, good or bad, joyful or miserable, we will solely trust you, O the three jewels. You know the best for us. With this sentiment reside frequently, I seek refuge in my gurus as many times as you can. As you recite it many times or imagine, streams of nectar and fivefold light rays pouring on you from the body of your root and lineage gurus, which enter your body and mind and all other sentient beings, thereby cleansing all the negativities and defilements, particularly the sinful deeds in connection with their gurus, such as injuring their body, disobeying their speech and disturbing his mind. Similarly, recall the earlier visualization while taking refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and imagine nectar streaming down the holy bodies, respectively of your meditation, deity Buddhas, scripture Dharmas, Bodhisattvas, Sarvakas, Pratigya Buddha, and so on. If you wish to carry this out a little more extensively, reflect like this. Some simpletons keep singing and playing without any concern for their ship, even when it is about to capsize in the middle of the ocean. So therefore, Buddha taught that we have to know the samsara and the suffering. The suffering upon suffering, as Panchen Lobsang Yishi says, can be easily understood even by the animals. But the suffering subject to change can be also understood by the non-Buddhists. So when Lord Buddha speaks about we have to know the suffering, identify the suffering. So that suffering refers to the third level of suffering. And in order to understand or identify that particular suffering, we need to understand the root of that suffering or the cause of that suffering, which is the delusions. As Lama Tsongkhapa said that in this samsaric field surrounded by dark fog, and all the other defilements without cleansing or without freeing oneself from the mind perceiving the true existence, then there is no way for us to be free from this samsara. So the suffering upon suffering and also suffering subject to change. And the third is the pervasive suffering, which is the main category of suffering that we have to contemplate and try as much as possible to liberate from it. Therefore, we will take birth in the bedroom due to our vicious karmas. Many of us consider the suffering subject to change and also a form of happiness. When Tibetan first went to Switzerland as settlement, and when they experienced better facilities, so they thought, oh, this may be the real heaven. So where there are all the facilities. So these are all, in reality, the suffering subject to change, be it the wealth, the clothes, the wear, or the house. So everything ultimately will be vanished or disintegrated. So even the precious human body that we have, which has also happened through the causes of the karma and delusions. So when we have such a body, there is impossible that we will be free from the suffering. So having understood one's own body as the source of suffering, then the option is not to suicide thinking about it, but the option and the practice is that to stop or eliminate the karma and the delusions. As it is said that, you know, after liberating or after eliminating the karma and the delusions, then we have to liberate. And this is something also supported by a scientist. And they also explain very similarly. I met about 10 years ago, American scientist. He was about 84 years at that time when I met him, and he told me that when we become anger, so the object of our anger, the person or anything, appears very ugly to us. But that projection of our mind, the 90% of the projection is created by our own mind, which is the anger. So the 84-year-old scientist who really practiced and study for many years, especially to the person with a disturbed mind. So this is the summary or the findings of his research. And his findings are very similar to Nagarjuna's text that the suffering really arises from the karma and the delusions. The conceptual mind creates an object in front of us, which is again based on the mind perceiving and apprehending the thing as intrinsic existence. So I was really surprised and I was really amazed by his saying, and I went to meet him while I was in America. He is about 90 years now, and we discussed, and also he has written a book, and he told me that we are living in the prison of anger. So this is the theme of his book. He is not a practitioner, he is not a Buddhist, but out of experiment and investigation, he got this finding. So if you are not able to clear the dark cloud of the ignorance, then there will be no opportunity or the chances for us to experience happiness. Therefore, we will take birth in the bedroom due to our vicious karmas. Once we are born there, how could we bear the miseries of the hotness, coldness, and other? The sources of refuge present before us have the ability to salvage us from this terrifying state because they qualify the four criteria which make someone worthy of a source of refuge. They are free themselves from all fearful states. They are skilled in the freeing others from terrifying state. And also the text really appears that way, but it's based on more faith. The fact is that, as it is stated in the second chapter of the Pramana text, that the Lord Buddha become a valid person, that especially we need to concentrate about the term become, which shows that he was not born person. He was not born as a valid person. And also in the Maitreya explains about the qualities of the Buddha's teaching. And also identify about the qualities of the Sangha, the three jewels. Also the being the impermanent, and also the being the nature of the wisdom and the compassion, which are the qualities explaining the qualities of the Buddha, and also the qualities of the Dharma and Sangha. So if we take refuge from the default of our mind, having understood such qualities of the Buddha, then they won't, the three jewels will never deceive us. Therefore, if you can trust and take refuge in them, it's impossible for them to fail you, reflecting that you have submitted yourself to the three jewels for refuge until you reach enlightenment. Take refuge in them as you have done before, while entrusting yourself to them, thinking, you know the best to free me from the terrors of samsara and the bad transmigrations. As it is very important for your practice of taking refuge to be effective, it will be good to go over these two visualizations one after the other so that you are deeply moved and inspired by it. When interested in a shorter version, you could do like this. Use any of the methods of reflecting upon the reasons of taking refuge and say this prayer, I seek refuge in the teacher, deity and the three jewels. While reciting that, imagine nectar flowing from any one of the refuges, from amongst the entire assembly of them, and cleansing your negativities. During the next two lines of the verse of taking refuge, by the collections, merit and wisdom from giving and so on, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Contemplate that, how these mother sentient beings are swayed karma and disturbing emotions. And with that, we have to visualize that we ourselves become the Lord Buddha. But it is not, we should not be proud, or we should not let the pride overcome us, feeling yourself as a Buddha. It is also very important in the Vajrayana teachings. So if we really have understanding about the pride based on the valid cognition, then it will be very beneficial. Otherwise, one will keep on developing more wrong views arising out of such perceptions. How nice if I could, for the benefit of all sentient beings across the expanse of space, attain Buddhahood through the fruits of whatever roots of virtue that may arise from my generosity, morality, and meditation. May I attain it, I shall attain it. For that purpose, I will train my mind stream in the stages of the path to enlightenment. How nice it will be if all sentient beings could remain in equanimity, free from biased attitude of love and hate. May they remain in it. May I bring them to that state. May I be blessed by the Guru Tejas to be able to do so. How nice it would be if all sentient beings could have the short-term happiness of the excellent higher rebirth, the long-term happiness of liberation and Buddhahood. So we speak about the coarse or the subtle form of the truth of suffering. Then of course we need to contemplate about the origin or the cause, which is the delusion. Then when we speak about the subtle or the coarse form of the Buddha, according to the highest Madhyamaka teachings, the mind perceiving the self as sustaining, substantially sustaining, so the truth of suffering arising out of that is considered to be the cursed one, while the subtle one is the one arising from the subtle form of the delusions in the highest Madhyamaka school. So in this way, make each of the four immeasurable qualified with the four features and visualize shower of nectar, purifying your impediments to realize the four immeasurables, and therefore feel convinced that all sentient beings, oneself and others, attain the four immeasurables. regarding the cultivation of special inclusive altruism, think along these lines. Though these sentient beings, my beloved mothers, desire happiness, they never cultivate the positive karmas, which will certainly serve as the cause for their happiness. And in spite of not wanting suffering, they indulge in all kinds of vicious behavior, which are the causes of suffering. Therefore, they have no occasion for happiness, but are inflicted with intense suffering. So without gaining the power to save the sentient beings in this life of mine, how can I bear the suffering that torment them for countless realms? I shall at any cost achieve the perfect, complete, precious enlightenment quickly and swiftly for the sake of my mother sentient beings. And for that purpose, I shall proceed to meditate on the guidance teachings on the stages of the path to enlightenment on the basis of sweet and profound Guru Deity Yoga. Fourth, clearly imagining the merit field in the space before you, directly at the level of your mid-eyebrow, reverberating with the profound and extensive Dharma teachings, outside them in accordance with their karmic share, the disciple to be tamed, receive water where there is barren dry land. The remote rocky lands have trees, boat and bridges to cross the water, food and drinks for those suffering hungry, friends for those without near and dear ones. So the sweet part and the other transmissions are related to the Vajrayana teachings also. But the refined gold lambrim is only based on focus on the sutra alone. The crown of all the Guru deities, the principal one and those surrounding him, are marked with white om syllable. The nature of mirror-like primordial wisdom and Buddha Virachana, the throat is marked with red A symbol, the nature of analytical primordial wisdom and Buddha Amitabha. So maybe I should read the liberation in the palm of the hand first. So liberation in the palm of hand, Kepcha Pabongka Rinpoche, a peerless king of the Dharma, spoke a little in order to set our motivations properly for the teachings to follow. Sorry for the delay. Immeasurable, countless numbers of Buddhas have come in the past. So if you have the courtesy of the wisdom publication text, we are on page number 4. But unfortunate beings such as myself are not worthy enough to be direct disciples even of Shakyamuni, the best of protectors, who stands out like a white lotus among the thousand great Buddhas, the saviors of this fortunate eon. First, we have to be forced into developing even a moment wholesome thought. This took us to the optimal physical rebirth as a human. He started the following informal teaching on the 30th, the new moon day of the 7th month of the Aryan birth year, and it lasted 24 days. People braved great hardships to get there from three major monasteries in Lhasa, from the central province, from Chang, Amdo, and Kham, just to taste the nectar of his oral teachings as a thirsty yearn for water. There were about 30 lamas and reincarnation of lamas, and many upholders of the three baskets of the teaching. In all, a gathering of over 700. The practical teaching he gave combined various traditions on the Lamrim, the stages of the battle and enlightenment. There were two oral lineages related to the Lamrim text, Manjushri's own words. One of these lineages was quite detailed and had developed in the central province. Another lineage of a briefer teaching flourished in the south of Tibet. He also included the concise teaching, the sweet part Lamrim, and in the part of the great scope section that deals with the interchange of self and others, he taught the seven-point mind training. We're on the page number 5. Again, I repeat, we have the book published by Wisdom Publication. These are some of the ways in which all of his discourses were so extraordinary. How could I possibly convey all this on paper? Yet what a pity if I were to forget all the key points contained in these inspiring instructions. This thought gave me the courage to write this book. As my precious guru later advised me, some of the people present could not follow the teaching and I could not teach them again. I am afraid I do not trust all the notes people took during the classes. I therefore ask you to publish a book. Put it in anything you feel sure of. In this book, I have recorded my Lama's teachings without any changes in the hope that this book, while no substitute for his speech, may still benefit my friends who wish to succeed in their practice. Part 1, the preliminaries. So be it, the great Tsongkhapa, the Dharma King of Three Realms, has said, this operation physical form is worth more than a wish-granting gem. You only gain its like the one, so hard to get, so easily destroyed. It's like a lightning bolt in the sky. Contemplate this and you will realize all worldly actions are but without chaff, and night and day you must extract some essence from your life. I, the yogi, practice this way, you wanting liberation, do the same. In all our births from beginningless time till the present, there has not been any form of suffering we have not undergone here in samsara, nor any form of happiness we have not experienced. But no matter how many bodies we have had, we have obtained nothing worthwhile from them. Now that we have gained this optimum human form, we should do something to derive some essence from it. So long as we do not examine this life, we will feel no joy whatsoever in finding such a supreme rebirth and would probably be happier on finding some pennies. We will not feel at all sorry if we waste this optimum human rebirth. We would probably feel much more regret if we lost some money. But this physical form which we have now is 100,000 times more valuable than any wish-granting gem. We're on page number 10. If you were to clean a wish-granting jewel by washing it 3 times, polishing it 3 times, and then offer it at the top of a victory banner, you would effortlessly obtain a good things of this life, food, clothes, and like. I don't need the fan over here. It's causing trouble for me. If you were to clean a wish-granting jewel by washing it 3 times, polishing it 3 times and then offer it at the top of a victory banner, you will effortlessly obtain the good things of this life. The last paragraph of 10 page. You must therefore try to extract essence from it now. If you don't, I'm sure to die anyway, and you cannot know when that will happen. We are now attending this Dhamma teaching, but none of us will be left in 100 years' time. In the past, Buddha, our teacher, amassed two collections over many eons, thus obtaining the Vajra body. We're on page number 11. Yet even he, to the common appearance, went to Nirvana. After him, there came scholars, adepts, translators, and pundits to both India and Tibet, but they have all seemingly departed this life. Nothing is left of them but their names to see. There was this one and some other. In short, there is no one you can produce as an example of a person whose death has spared. How could you alone live forever? You have no hope of being spared. Therefore, not only are you sure to die, but also you cannot be certain when this will happen. You cannot even be sure that you will still be alive next year in the human realm, still wearing your three types of monk's robes. By this time next year, you may have already been reborn as an animal covered in shaggy fur with horns on your head. Or you may have been born as a hungry ghost, for example, having to live without being able to find food or even a drop of water. The last para of the page number 11. As long as we remain uncritical, we never suspect that we are going to the lower realms. We probably think that we more or less keep our vows, perform most of our daily recitations, and have not committed any serious sins, such as killing a person and running off with his horse. The trouble is we have not looked into things properly. We should think it all in detail. Then we would see that we are not free to choose whether we go to the lower realms or not. This is determined by our karma. We have a mixture of virtuous and non-virtuous karma in our mental streams. The stronger of these two will be triggered by craving and clinging when we die. When we look into which of these two is stronger in our mental streams, we will see that it is non-virtue. And the degree of strength is determined by the force of the motive, the deed, the final step. Thus, although we might think we have only 10 small non-virtues, their force is in fact enormous. Let us take an example. Suppose you say one scornful word to your pupils, for instance. You are motivated by strong hostility, and as for the deed, you use the harshest words that will really wound him. And for the final step, you feel proud and have an inflated opinion of yourself. These three parts, motivation, deed, and final step, could not have been done better. Suppose you kill a loose, your motive is strong hostility. You roll the loose between your fingers and so on, torturing it a long while. Then eventually you kill it. For the final step, you think that was helpful and become very smug. So the non-virtue has become extremely powerful. We might feel our virtue is very strong, but in fact it is extremely weak. The preparation, the motive, the main part of the deed, the final step, the dedicating the virtue, etc., all have to be done purely if the virtue is to be very strong. Contrast this with the virtue we perform. First, there is our motive. I think it is rare for us to be motivated by even the least of motives. A yearning for a better rebirth, let alone have the best of motives, bodhicitta, or the next best, renunciation. Right at the beginning, we usually aspire to achieve desires related to this life's trivia. Any prayers we make to this end are in fact sinful. Then for the main part of the day, there is no pure joy or enthusiasm to it. When we recite even one rosary of Om Mani Padme Hum, for example, our minds cannot stay focused the whole time. Everything is either sleep or distraction. It is difficult to do things well for even the time it takes to recite the 100 of gods of Tunisia once. And when it comes to making the final prayers and dedications, we slip back into directing them toward this life. So although we might feel we perform great virtues, in fact they are only feeble. Sometimes we do not prepare properly, and at other times we bolster the motive or the final step, and there are times when we don't do any of them properly. Thus, only the non-virtue karma in our mental stream is very strong. It is the only possible thing that will be activated when we die. And if this is what indeed happens, the place where we will go could only be the lower rooms. We are on page number 13. And when Lord Buddha said that by the teaching of the truth, so we will be eliminated with suffering. So it shows that due to the merits and the karma we accumulated, so the sections of the many karmas are also to be reborn back in this hole. Of course, the ignorance pertaining to the cause and effect. In order to eliminate that, we need to understand the dependent origination of cause and effect. So the idea with not understanding the dependent origination of cause and effect is resulted in the karma to be reborn in the lower realms. So in order to eliminate such a misunderstanding or the wrong view, we need to understand the dependent origination based on the Madhyamika tradition. So that is what is being taught by Chandrashita in his text. And also it exists in the 400 verses that the teaching of the Lord Buddha is not to fulfill or obtain. It is a teaching to obtain the immediate the purpose of the human rebirth, but ultimately it is for the highest excellence of the liberation. So the immediate purpose is for the happiness for this life and the other, but the ultimate and for the long run, it is for the liberation. So when we speak about the term, the nature of the phenomena that Lord Buddha teach, so there may be different understandings about it. We cannot be certain, even by the means of direct valid cognition. We'll continue on page number 13. Nevertheless, our teacher correctly perceived this extremely obscure object of valid cognition and taught on it without error. Thus, we can be certain only by using the Buddha's valid scriptures for an inference based on trust. So, if it is so definite that we shall be reborn in the lower realms, from this moment on, we must look for some means to stop it from happening. If we really want to be free of the lower realms, we should seek some refuge to protect us. For example, a criminal sentenced to execution will seek the protection of an influential official in order to escape punishment. If we have become tainted by sinful karma through our misdeeds, we are in danger of being punished under law and of going to the lower realms. We should seek the refuge of three jewels, because only they can protect us from this fate. But we must not seek this refuge. We must also modify our behavior. If there were some way the Buddhas could rid us of our sins and obscurations by, say, washing them with the water or by leading us by the hand, it's already 11:30 now, they would have already done so and we would now have no suffering. They do not do that. The Great One taught the Dharma, and it is we who must modify our behavior according to the laws of the cause and effect and do so unmistakenly. It says in the sutra, the sage do not wash sins away with water. They do not rid beings of suffering with their hands. They do not transfer realizations of suchness into others. They liberate by teaching the truth of suchness. When page number 15, the second para. Even the rebirths of gods and humans are nothing but suffering. The human rebirth has the suffering of birth, old age, sickness, and death. It is the suffering of being separated from things one holds dear, meeting with unpleasantness, and not finding the things one wants despite searching for them. The demigods also have suffering, for they are wanted when they go to battle, and they suffer all the time from jealousy. When reborn as a god of the desire realm, one suffers because one displays the omens of death. The gods of the higher realms do not have any manifest suffering. However, they are still by nature under the sway of the suffering that applies to all conditioned phenomena because they have not gained enough freedom to maintain their state. On page number 16. Chandra Komin said in his letter to a disciple, there are kinsmen stranded in samsara's ocean who seem to have fallen into the abyss. When due to birth, death, and rebirth, you don't recognize them and reject them. freeing only yourself, there is no greater shame. In other words, although we do not recognize each other as such, there is not one sentient being who has not been our mother, and just as we have taken countless rebirths, we have had countless mothers, no being has been our mother. No being has not been our mother. And each time they were our mother, the kindness they show us was not different from the kindness shown by our mother in this life. Since they did nothing but lovingly care for us, there is not the slightest difference. So we will stop here. So the toilets are, for announcement, the toilets are located outside of gate number 4. And a free... So if you want to take the milk, you might have to bring your own bowl and spoon if you have not brought it today.